Creative Ideas for the Church Pianist by Shelley Hamilton is a ministry session we're about to hear. Mrs. Hamilton ministers at Majesty Music as pianist, composer, arranger, and recording producer. This session was part of the Spiritual Leadership Conference 2010, hosted by Dr. Paul Chappell and the Lancaster Baptist Church.
Our Heavenly Father, Lord, thank you for this time, and I thank you for these people coming all this way to learn more about you and to help learn things that will benefit their ministries. And I pray that this time will be profitable. I pray that everyone here will learn something, Lord, they can take with them and help them in their piano playing. And we thank you for music, that you've given it to us. It's such a wonderful gift. And we pray that you will bless each person here, bless their ministries, and be with me as I speak, Lord, in Jesus' name, amen. Okay, thank you for coming. I want to explain these books first. These are called The Improviser. There are three of them right here that I have. This is book, Improviser Book 1. These are textbooks for hymn players. I grew up playing classical music and not playing hymns. And my mom was a pianist at our church, and she always played, and she never got classical. So she wanted to make sure I got it. And so she wanted me to get the scales and, you know, and develop the technique. But I did get that, but I didn't get the hymns. I didn't ever play hymns growing up. And then after college, I realized, you know, I don't want to be a concert pianist. I want to play in church. So I had taken piano, you know, music theory in college, and then got my master's degree and had more theory. And all of a sudden, as I listened to my mom play, it started clicking what she was doing, because I knew what the chords were. Because I learned the chords, I didn't know what to do with my hands yet, but I had a knowledge of what, you know, what the notes and chords and chord progressions were. And it really helped me learn to play hymns and learn to improvise. Because, you know, the hymn book is written for the singer. You have the soprano, alto, tenor, and bass, and you can play that as a pianist, but usually you want to make it more pianistic, and you want to use the extremes of the, you know, use the full range of the keyboard, and so you have to improvise. You have to make up things that you're not seeing on the page, and that's a knack. That is something you can learn, and some will be more gifted at it than others. Some have a natural ear that, you know, we just all, God made us all differently, and we all have different backgrounds. My mom, as I was saying, she didn't have classical training growing up, but she grew up on a farm, and she had hours to just sit and play. And so she would go to church and go home and try to imitate it. And so she has a tremendous ear, but she took hours just developing her ear, and she has a gift at it too. And so anyway, hadn't done that, so I really had to go from here and take it down to here. And I just have a burden for pianists that are in my predicament that maybe have learned to read music, you know, from the page, but don't know how to improvise on the hymns. So that's why I even did these books. There are 9 books in all. There are 3 different sets. See if I can explain this well. 3 different sets. This is the first set. In each set are 3 different books. Okay, there's the text that teaches theory and teaches fill-ins and just teaches you different things about hymn playing. Modulation, intervals, scales, keys, you know, different exercise drills that you can do that you would do in a lot of different hymns. We put those drills into a textbook, and you fill out things. There's an answer key in the back. And so there's the textbook, and then there's this book called Preludes and Congregational Accompaniments. These are hymns that were taken, the 4-part, and the most common 4-part writing, like Amazing Grace, you know, Blessed Assurance, and then improvised on them. And most songs, if they're not, they're all 2 pages. The first page would be the first stanza, and the second page would be a way to improvise it differently. So you don't, because you, as you improvise, you know, you don't like to always play it the same way every stanza. You try to match the text and do different things with it. So we did 2 different stanzas, unless the song is very long, And then there's only one stanza because it takes up both pages, just one stanza. And then there are some invitational songs that have like three or four or five different ways to play them, because sometimes you play them over and over. And some of them match. It will say if it varies from the, you know, hymn book harmonies. If we change the harmonies a little bit, if you're playing by yourself, you couldn't do it if the organ was playing with you, or if the congregation was singing four parts, you couldn't do that. But if you're playing by yourself, you could change the harmonies. So anyway, and they're divided into preludes. They're divided into three songs by text, by a topic, so that you, and with modulations going from one to another. So it's got several different things you can use it for. But that's the preludes and congregational accompaniments. I had my daughters memorize some of these, as many as I could get them to, besides their classical training, which they didn't have much time after that. But I had to memorize them, because that's how I first learned to play hymns. I took my mom as a great hymn player, Flora Jean Garlock, and I would just say, play it. And I'd watch, and I'd try to imitate it. And then, oh, what did you do there? You know, and then I just played it exactly like she did. And I have people sometimes say, you sound just like your mom. Well, there's a reason. And anyway, so I had her, she did a lot of these accompaniments here. And if you just memorize it, then when you go to church, you could play it without any music. And then you could play it as a prelude. Whenever you say, somebody says play a prelude, you don't have a book, you have it memorized. Or you could be looking at the four parts and have the fill-ins in your mind because you've memorized it. And then you, as you memorize fill-ins, then you see how they can be used in other songs. You know? And so I highly recommend that book. And then there's the solos. It's just medium difficulty solos that you can use Wednesday nights for communion, for whatever, or offertories, whatever you'd like. Does anybody not familiar with these? I know some. How many have done these? Raise your hand. Okay, about six or seven. Okay, is there anybody that says, oh, that would be really nice. I would really work on that. Raise your hand. Okay, I see you first. You can have these. There you go. Okay, thank you. Okay, let's look at it. Oh, okay. I said, Ron, how am I going to give these out? You know, Nathan gave them to me. He said, you can give these as a free giveaway. And I couldn't think of any ideas, so. But anyway, that worked, I guess. Okay. Okay, take your hand out. Exciting congregational playing. What I decided to do in this hour is at Music College that I talked about that we have in 2 weeks, I do quite a few classes, probably about seven or eight, and we have several other pianists that do it also. So we can cover a lot more. And but I only had 1 hour for these several days here. So I decided to go with exciting congregational playing, just some different techniques that I use to make the piano accompaniment alive. Okay, and this, you know, sometimes you do want to have variety in your piano playing, even when you're playing for the congregation, because some songs will be slower and more meditative. Okay, so I will play a song like that differently than I would play something that's alive. And so mainly we're going to be talking about songs that are alive. But if I'm playing Amazing Grace, I will play it. I will play it in a different style, okay? Than and Amazing Grace, even though it's meditative, you'll still do some fill-ins to keep the motion going on held notes. You all know what a fill-in is, okay? When you come to an end of a phrase in a song, gospel song or a hymn, a lot of times it is held. It'll either be a half note, a dotted half note, or a whole note. And what do you do on the piano till the next phrase comes in? Okay, so that is what I would call a fill-in. Or sometimes you can fill in, like if the song is in quarter note time, 4/4 time, 1, 2, 3, 4, you might do 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, and you might have fill-in notes, or you might have a dotted quarter note, and you want to do something maybe like I might do, you know, it's a half note. So on the held note, I might come down with an octave, or I might come up. You know, I do something on that held note, but that's basically what a fill-in is. Okay, I don't have this on your handout, but I want to discuss four different things that you can incorporate into your hymn playing. Okay, first of all, and this is, I already mentioned, the hymn book is written for the singer. So the pianist's responsibility is to play from the four parts and improvise to make the music pianistic. You want to use piano extremities. You don't want to keep all your piano playing right here in the middle where the four parts. You know, I could do that, but I'm hoping to reach out, use some of my lower register, some of my upper register to make it more pianistic. One rule of thumb is when you take the piano or take chords up in the upper register, you are going to probably have more closed position. That means it will be, the notes will be closer in together. All right, to fill it out. Let's see if I can. I can't think of what I want. That. Okay, I wouldn't probably play, you know, just a triad up there because it's going to sound lonely. It needs more notes around it and closer in especially when you're up in the upper register, so it's not lonely all by itself. And in the same way, when you go down into the lower register, you usually do more open positions. And because if you play, I wouldn't play a triad down there. It's muddy. It gets real muddy. So it's more octaves, maybe ninths or tenths, which I can't reach. Or you break up a tenth, you know, like you play the root, the fifth, and then the tenth above that. But it's more of an open position as you get down. Okay? Especially middle C going down, you want to keep it. And I would never do a down there. I would do, or I'd keep it more open, not muddy, okay? So that's just a general rule of thumb. One way to make your piano sound fuller, and you probably all know this, is to put the tenor, you would play the soprano and alto in the right hand, and put the tenor note with the soprano and alto, okay? And usually it would be in your thumb, your right hand thumb, but sometimes that tenor note is going to go between the alto and the soprano. So then you just put it in between. You take the tenor note up an octave. But usually it would be in your thumb of your right hand, right? Because the soprano and alto would be up in that part. Okay? And then you would double the bass in your left hand. So you can play a hymn from the hymn book and already start making it fuller just by doubling the bass. I have the tenor in my right hand thumb, and I'm doubling the bass. Already it's fuller than, see? So anyway, that is one thing, and if you're not comfortable or familiar with doing that, I would suggest practicing and practicing till that becomes very, very familiar to you. And the hymn book, usually, I've seen some hymn books that the part writing isn't real great, but most of your hymn books, especially your mainstream hymn books, are written with good part writing, very good part writing. So if you would do that little trick, put the tenor in your right hand, up an octave in your right hand, and double the bass, you are going to have good theoretical music theory, good part writing in your playing just by doing that. And what I hear a lot, I hear a lot of pianists that have never really learned to do that. It's a little difficult. It's a little difficult unless you've done it a lot, you know, or if you're very good at sight reading, it's not too difficult. But a lot of pianists, I find, have grown up and just done it on their own as best they could, you know, without having a hymn-playing teacher, because there aren't a lot of them in every city, you know. And so you just do the best you can, and you didn't realize that you really should be meticulous about playing the correct notes. So you're trying to add fill-ins. So then you end up, I hear a lot of just kind of rolling the left hand, but not always in the notes in the chord. And if you would really take the discipline and discipline yourself to sit down and go through the hymn book and make sure that you have every note correct on every chord, okay, that you've got the tenor present. If you don't have the tenor present, you may not have the right doubling on that chord. Probably you won't. Okay? And if you have the alto missing, you know, I've had music theory, so I have learned the chord doubling rules. I have learned the voice leading rules. So for me, I can hear it pretty readily because I had so much training in that. But if you haven't had training in that, if you would just play what's written, and make sure you don't leave notes out or don't play notes that aren't there. I don't know if that's not right. Make sure you don't play notes. I mean, you can add notes that are not there if they're in the chord. But if you don't know what that chord is, you may not know if it's right or not. And you use your ear, which you can trust a lot of times. You can trust your ear that it doesn't sound right. But if you have not had good theory training, you say it sounds good to me, but you didn't, you know, like just like you grow up maybe saying ain't, you know, and everybody around you said ain't. And it sounds good to you because that's how you grew up. You know, so if you're not trained in correct musical grammar, you may not know that what you're playing really doesn't sound right, you know. So what I'm trying to say is if you can still, without having musical training, well, you'd probably have some if you play the piano. I'm sure you've had some. But without having theory training, you can probably pretty much get the chord right if you are meticulous that you are playing every note that is there, and then maybe you can add some too. But I wouldn't leave anything out because you might be leaving out the third or the root or something. Okay, I hate to come down hard on that, but I just think that is one of the things that is missing today in piano playing that I hear, that they just never took the time to sit down and meticulously learn to put the tenor in the right hand and double the bass. And it may be very hard for you at first, but it is. How many of you do that already? Raise your hand. Okay, how many of you play hymns and don't do that? Okay, how many of you want to play hymns and you don't play hymns at all? That's about half of you, I think. Okay. All right. So we want to use the fill-in or filler material on held notes to give forward motion. And so we are going to be talking about that. Make sure also you keep your piano playing musical. You want to play the phrases. Just like I would not talk to you like this and every note, every word that I say and every syllable of every word that I have is equal, you know, emphasis. I don't want to play like that. But I do hear that a lot. That everything is. Does that sound familiar to anybody? And it's amazing grace how sweet the sound. Usually a phrase kind of builds in the middle and then tapers off at the end. And that's how you should play. Just phrasing makes you sound so much better. And you just have to make yourself, if you don't have a teacher that is sitting over you and making sure you do it. One thing I have told students in the past is exaggerate it. You may say, I'm doing it. It's just like your students, if you have piano students, you tell them to have dynamics. I am playing loud. No. I am playing soft. No, it's more mezzo forte. You know, you have to exaggerate. To have dynamic contrast, you almost have to exaggerate. It's like someone singing in the choir, and you tell them, have facial expression. I do have facial expression. No, you look like there's no facial expression. You know, unless go stand in the mirror, watch yourself, and it's almost like if you're not used to singing with expression, you feel like you're making a fool of yourself, and everybody's looking at you, what is wrong with them? Because you're not used, you know, you have to exaggerate it before it ever even comes across. And your musical phrasing and dynamics you need in your hymn playing. Don't make everything loud. Don't make every note the same. And you can improve your hymn playing 100% if you put the tenor in the right hand, even with no fill-ins. Double the bass, play with phrasing, and play with dynamic contrast. People are going to say, that is pretty. That is beautiful. That speaks to me. It's not like a computer just playing everything, you know. Music is the language of the emotions, and emotions have a lot of ups and downs, and music does too. So really, really make yourself work on that. Now, and make sure too, now sometimes you're playing a big piece and you're going to be coming down at it more like that. But I would, I'm sorry if I'm going to hurt anybody's ears. I try not to attack. Okay, coming down like this, you know, and you want, and this is how I learned to play classical music, is you feel into the keys, okay? You don't, you know, my hands stay very close to the keys, and then they don't raise up much. And it's almost like I'm kneading bread. You feel into the depth of every key. I can just play one note and make it musical. I can just play it without any musicality, okay? So I really want to emphasize musicality because you can improve your hymn playing really drastically by playing musically, feeling into the keys, and try not to hit, okay? Okay, we want to incorporate variety into our hymn playing, number three. Number one was doubling the tenor in your right hand and making the hymn from the hymn book more pianistic. Number two is keep your piano playing musical. Number three is incorporate variety into your hymn playing. Don't always play every stanza the same. Okay, try to do something different. And if you're just learning to improvise, don't worry so much about that, because you may just still be worried about getting that tenor in the right hand thumb, you know, and doubling the bass. And then you might add a few fill-ins, okay? You're just worried right now about getting any fill-ins in at all, not about making every stanza different, okay? So you have to start somewhere. So start with just the fill-ins that you can do, and then as you learn, you're going to develop tools of fill-ins. You're going to develop your own vocabulary of fill-ins. And as you listen to other piano players, you say, oh, what did they do there? Try to go home and imitate it, you know, and then it becomes your fill-in. Really, it's fine. But I find when I hear a new fill-in and I first try it, I have to do it about three or four times before it finally is going to stick and become my own, because I'm still thinking through it so much. It's not just natural that I just can do that fill-in. And you're going to be the same way as you learn, probably. So as you develop, you want to not play every stanza the same. Try to match the text with your piano playing. Don't play Amazing Grace like you play Blessed Assurance. And don't play Blessed Assurance like you play Amazing Grace. You know, match the text. And don't play hymns like gospel songs and vice versa. A gospel song is different than a hymn. A hymn would be something like When I Survey. The chord changes a lot within a measure. A gospel song, the chords stay almost the same for a whole measure at a time, or even for two measures at a time. It will stay the same. So I don't do chord. I wouldn't play it in a gospel chord octave, octave chord, or whatever gospel style that you have. It's going to be more majestic, and you want to, your piano playing, you want to match the majesty of it. So, but in a gospel song, I can do a lot of. It will be a different type of style. So try to make a difference in your different styles. And if you get the improviser, piano, congregational accompaniments and preludes, it has gospel songs and hymns. Okay? And it's just a good way to start. If you really want to develop your hymn playing, it's a good way to, it's not the only way to play those hymns, obviously. You know, we're all different. We all have different styles we've grown up with that we've heard and that we imitate. But it is one way. And if you're wondering, how do I develop a style, my own style, it's one place to start. And then as you start developing your fill-ins, you could say, well, I'm going to use that fill-in from the improviser, but I'm going to do my own thing here. Or I never thought of that fill-in. I know that whole hymn. I can play it a million times and with different fill-ins, but I hadn't thought of that fill-in. That would be something I could add to my tool, palette of fill-ins. So I highly recommend that. Okay, and then number four, understand your keys, intervals, and chords, which I'm not going to go into in depth at all today, just because of time. But you want to understand your chords if you can. If you can. Like I said, if you play from the hymn book and play what's there, you don't even have to know that's a G chord or a C chord. But it's going to help you if you know it's a G chord. And what is a G chord? Spell it. GBD. What's a G5 chord? A G7 chord, I'm sorry. GBD, F. You add the minor seventh on it. Okay? And if you know that the key of C has every key has three main chords in it. So 1, 4, and 5. In the key of C, it's what? C, F, and G. And G a lot of times has the seventh on it. GBD with F on it, So that's one way to start. Just learn the 1, 4, and 5 of every key. Okay, let's go to When the Roll is Called Up Yonder. It's the first song in your handout. What key are we in here? A flat. All righty. What are the 1, 4, and 5 chords of A flat? A flat, D flat, and E flat. Spell the A flat chord. A flat, C, E flat. The D flat chord, D flat, F, A flat. And the 5 chord is E flat, G, B flat. And if you add the minor seventh, a D flat. Mm-hmm. So it'd be E. They're all a third apart. Your chords are a third apart. The notes in it, the intervals. So E flat would be E flat, G, B flat. And if I add a minor seventh, it's another third, D flat. Okay? It's built on thirds. Your chords are built on thirds. Okay, so let's look at the chord structure here on When the Roll is Called Up Yonder. It starts on the what chord? A-flat chord. Okay, what is second full measure, what chord is that? The second full measure. D-flat chord, uh-huh. There's a B-flat, it's just a non-harmonic, but it soon resolves down to the A-flat. See that in the right hand? I'd still say it's a... I don't think it's B flat minor to D flat. It's just like a. There are going to be some non-harmonic tones here and there. You just learn to recognize them. But doesn't that sound like if I were chording it, like a oompa? I'd probably go to the 4 chord, right? My ear tells me that. If I have trouble determining what chord is in a measure like that, or just on a beat. I could do something like that, a oompa, and say, it doesn't. Probably doesn't change that quickly. And so that B flat is just a non-harmonic that resolves. It will resolve real quickly. All your non-harmonic tones will resolve real quickly. Okay, what is the chord in measure, the last measure of line one? A flat. Okay, what is the chord in measure four? E flat. E flat what? The seventh. See the D flat on it? Everybody see that? I want everybody to see that. Okay, it's an E flat chord. And a lot of times the seventh is in a second interval somewhere. You don't usually see it in root position. I usually don't see the D flat on the top. E flat, G, B flat, D flat. That seventh is, it will be a second somewhere in the chord, probably. Okay, so if you see a second in one of your chords, you can probably, it's a seventh chord of some type. It's not always on the five chord, but mostly on the five chord. Okay, so we see we're in the key of A flat. The three main chords are A flat, D flat, and E flat. All right, so one thing you want to incorporate, and if you want to just take notes on this music, please do, because it might help you remember. In the second measure, look at beats 3 and 4. What would you call that? That the bass is on the A flat going up to the C, and the soprano's on the C going down to the A flat. What do you call it? Contrary motion. And it's very nice to incorporate in your hymn playing. Because I think in the hymn book, it probably just stays on the A flat, doesn't it? Probably that. But if I bring the bass up to the C, it leads me right to the D flat, the four chord, right? And my melody's coming down. So I've got contrary motion. See how nice that is? And then we're on the four chord. What does the left hand do there? It doesn't just stay on the D flat. It steps up on the chord tones. It's a D flat chord, D flat, F, A flat. A flat happens to be the one chord of the key of A flat. So it leads right to it. Dun, da, dun, da, dun. See? So the bass, bum, 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 ba, bum, 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 bum. I'm back to A flat. Isn't that nice? And you can do that on a lot of songs. Da, 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 da. Now what do we have here? What is that? The melody is dum ba bum. And the bass is A flat, B flat to the C, and the C to the B flat to the A flat. We just had it. It's contrary motion, but going the opposite. Okay, it's going out this time. See, that's just something nice to do in your hymn playing. When you can incorporate contrary motion, do it. Bum, ba, bum, ba, bum, 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 bum. Okay, what did we do on beat 4 of bar 3? Anybody tell me? What do we do with the bass? Probably the hymn goes, stays on the A flat, but what are we doing? We're following it down in tenths. See, the bass is going in tenths with the melody. You know what a tenth is? You know what an octave is, right? If we did it in octaves, it would be. That is not good hymn playing. Don't follow your soprano with your bass in octaves. That's parallel octaves, okay? It's just the way it is. I'm sure there are times that you could break that if you are doing. Sometimes I will play the melody in the bass, like. So then I might follow it. It's like I'm doing it in this style where the bass and the soprano are the melody, and I've got the tenor and the alto in the middle. Do you see what I'm saying? So that's a particular thing I'm doing. But in normal four-part writing, the bass does not want to follow in octaves with the soprano. Okay? But it's very nice and tense. A tenth is a third more. So we've got the melody is on a C, look, at beat 3 of bar 3, and the bass is on an A flat. That is a tenth. Right? A flat to A flat is an octave. A flat to C is a tenth. And then I break away from it. Okay? Look at bar 4. What is that fill in? We have a held note of a dotted half note. What would you call that fill in? Walk down, just running octaves. See what is done here? You could have stayed. What is the chord? We're on a what chord now? E flat. E flat 7. What? Spell it. E flat, G, B flat, and a D flat. So my first note of my running octaves probably will be a chord tone. Doesn't have to do, but you have to be, but it usually is. I could have started on the root, on the E flat. Something like that, bum, ba bum, bum, triplet, da 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 da, or 16th notes going down. But just start on the G is a chord tone, isn't it? It's the third of the chord. And that leads me right back to the A flat. This is a fill-in you can do many, many times. Okay, look at bar 7. It's the last measure of the second staff system. Beat 3. What is it? It's just, instead of, what am I doing? Just take it down an octave. And then I go to my nearest A flat and I spell my chord up. We're on an A flat chord, A flat, C, E flat, A flat, right? Now here's a thing you can do. In the right hand, it's just kind of like a trio. Okay, and it's almost like an octave chord in the bass. See, but it's keeping that motion going. It's making your playing more exciting. Bum, bum, ba, bum, 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 ba, bum. Once I do it once, I probably will do it twice. It sounds like it's planned. You know, or I could have just done. I could have done an octave chord there, but I wouldn't keep it going real, real long. This is a common thing that hymn players do, is they learn octave chord. It's an octave in the bass of the root or some chord tone. It could be the third or the fifth of the chord, and then come up with a triad. That triad. We're on an A-flat chord, so I come up with an A-flat triad. Usually it's an inverted triad. Usually you don't do it in root position. Some kind of inversion of that A-flat chord. All right? And when I go back down for my octave with octave chord, try to go to another chord tone of the chord. Try not to always I would probably bum, maybe down to the fifth of the chord. Maybe come up to the third, bum, down to the fifth of that chord, the E-flat chord. Okay, I would vary the octave that goes down. Don't always keep it in root position, because it will get old fast. And I don't think I would play the whole thing in octave chord, a song ever. I don't think I would. I would. Does it get old? Is it just me? And you know, you have developed a technique, that's great, but break from it sometimes. Okay? Like when I played at Calvary before I break from it, then I follow the melody and tens with a bass. Octave chord, tens, break, running octaves. Octave chord, break, octave chord, running octave. Okay, do you see how it gives it some variety? Octave chord, nothing wrong with it at all, but it is a gospel. I wouldn't do it in a hymn style, but a gospel song, as long as you break away from it sometimes and not always go down to the root. Okay? Let's see, let's keep moving on. Look at the verse 2. This is just an example. What I did here in the right hand, or mom did, whoever did this, is a duet. You know, it's not playing the tenor in the right hand and doubling the bass. I'm varying from that. But I do have all the notes of the chord present. Okay, an octave chord, you can't do that, doubling the tenor. You know what I'm saying? When you're doing octave chord, it's a different thing. You're doing a chord up here and an octave chord here. So does everybody understand that? Okay. But here, you could even put this up an octave, the right hand. Break. Break. Okay? So octave chord, break away from it. Take this home. Learn it. Learn it. Okay? Blessed Assurance. One thing you want to do is set up a pattern sometimes. And Blessed Assurance is something that you would want very exciting. And the more exciting, part of it is knowing the right notes to play, whatever it is, okay? That's just the way it is in piano playing. But once you get those notes down, you want to have so much energy in your playing, it will make your congregational singing very exciting if you put the energy into it. Okay? It just makes a difference. If you're just kind of just lackadaisical and it's just I'm just playing, but if you make it real exciting and you are full of energy and you are playing confidently and playing into those notes, your congregation or your choir is going to sing out a lot. They're going to sing confidently because that's how you're playing. And if you don't have the confidence, practice, practice, practice until you feel confident at home that you know it, and then you'll probably be scared to death when you get to church. That's okay. You just experience, do it more and more and more till you feel more confident. You know, but that's the goal. That's where you want to get. But when I'm playing improvising on a hymn, a lot of times I will set up some type of motif, some type of pattern. Like here, it's bum, 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 quarter, eighth, you know, one. Okay, see, bum, 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 bum. And it's like a planned accompaniment. You know, when you can follow it through, follow a certain pattern away. But look at bar, the first, it's the third, the second full measure. What's in the left hand? It's a scale, pretty much. Start on the root, go up to the fifth, and then you go up to the third of the chord. That is a nice thing. Da, 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 da. Because all those first, really, the first two bars and a half of the second, the third bar is what chord? D major. What are the three main chords in the key of D? D, G, and A. 1, 4, and 5. D, G, and A. And the A will a lot of times have the minor seventh on it, which is what? A, C sharp, E, G. Okay, so let's look at the chorus. It goes with that same pattern. Bum, 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 bum. Okay, that's one way to do it. Then look at the second verse. We take that motif. Okay, I did want to explain a chord. It's called the triple melody chord. It's explained in the Hymnprovisor. All it is, can I write on this board? There's a marker, yeah. Thank you, Jennifer. Okay. Okay, right here? Okay, let's take a D chord. Okay, we're in the key of D in this song. Okay, it's not. Okay, let's just take a D chord. Okay? if I were to take it up, I would take it up an octave and add the melody down one octave from this, okay? I've got a D, F sharp, A. The melody is what? A. It's the top note. It's the melody. I'm going to double that. I'm going to put another A here and then a D, F sharp, and A. It's the same chord as this, but I've got two melody notes. Now it's a four-note chord. It's still a D chord. It's not just a D triad. Now it's a four-note chord. A, D, F sharp, A. And then I might take up the left hand, okay, and play the A at the bottom of that, and then a D and an F sharp. So I've got that and that. I've got three melody notes. One, two, three. Okay, see that? I can play a whole hymn in triple melody chords or a gospel song. And what it does, remember when I told you, thank you, remember what I told you when you play in the upper register? You want more notes. You don't want it to be lonely or sparse. So if I'm going to take up the chord D, F sharp, A, okay, what I did is I'm playing that. The second one is A, D, F sharp, A, D, F sharp, A. My left hand is going up, playing a triad with the melody on the bottom in my pinky. And then the right hand has the four-note chord. And so I've got one, two, three, four, five, six, seven notes. And see how full that sounds? Or I might put an octave in between the left hand and the right hand. So I've got A, D, F sharp, a whole octave, and then A, D, F. Could play the whole thing. You know, if it's a fast moving eighth note, I'll just play octaves, like one note here and an octave here. And then a triple melody. And now it moves fast. I'm not going to play a chord every, whatever chords they would be. It would just be, they're just passing notes real quick. I just play them in octaves. Okay, triple melody. It's one way to get okay, but triple melody gets you up into the upper register. Okay, let's look at this, verse 2. We've got just an octave down and then contrary motion. An octave and a single note in my left hand. Melody notes. I love this. Bum, ba bum, bum, ba bum. That makes your piano playing exciting. You could go, you know, bum, ba bum, bum. And I would go up in the upper register with an octave and a single note. I probably wouldn't play that by It's Lonely. Does that sound a little sparse to you? But if I bring my left hand up and play it also, I could even. Like that. Okay, then look at triple melody is a very good chord to learn, and it's in all these hymns that I've given you. It's used probably pretty much most of the time. Okay, look at the chorus. What do we have there? Running octaves. Okay, just keep bum 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 bum, and you just start with a chord tone. Okay, the first is it's a D chord, D, and I just go down to a lower neighboring tone, D, C sharp, D, then up to a chord tone, F sharp. See how that sounds planned? Because it's a pattern. Bum, 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 bum. And if you aren't real comfortable with doing this, pencil it in your hymn book. You know, just pencil in a little running octave thing. That, and you just have to plan it out. I've done this so much, you know, that it becomes more second nature as you do it more. But at first, I wrote them out, every little running eighth note I played. You know, because I didn't want to get there and get lost. And another thing, this is probably a more advanced thing to do. But we have two pianos playing at our church, and an organ and a synthesizer. So a lot of times I can go to something different because the other piano player is playing the chords and everything, or the organ is. You know, if your organ is playing out strong chords, you can do something really neat as just an icing on the cake or just something extra. But this, if you take these running octaves in the chorus, I could double them in octaves in the upper register. I could go. You know, and I can do that for a whole hymn. I'll just take it and do running octaves while they're playing that, and it's exciting. It makes it really big. It's almost like you have a concerto going. And all it is the running octaves that I figured out in the left hand that usually plays down in the bass, and I take it up an octave and double it here, just doubling the fill-ins. And all you have to do, if you're looking at the hymn book, I just look at my bass note. I follow my bass line, and I write in, and I just watch the words and make sure I stay with it. But I've done it a lot. As I said, at first I wrote it out. But you just see that it goes from a D up to a G. So I just do something filling in till I get to the G. And then I do chord tones and running notes. And then it sounds a lot harder than it is to play. It sounds a lot harder. And once you master that, that technique of filling in bass notes, filling in the bass notes. Do most of you do that already? So all this is just doubling it with the right hand, okay? Let's look at the next. Let's look at two line staff systems from the bottom. What are those? Are triple melody chords. It's a triad in the right hand. I don't have the melody always in the pinky of the left hand, but it's still the same chord. It's a D major chord to an E minor chord to an A7 chord. That's a triple melody. See it? Do you ever do that in this hymn? Da 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 da. You know, kind of pull it out. So I would just go bum bum bum. What is that? That is the first phrase. And it ties, you know, it's just the motif. Da 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 da. It's a short musical fragment. Yes. Okay, when do I need to quit? 25 after? Thank you. Okay. Do we have any questions? Let me look real quickly at the next hymn, at the verse 2. Joyful, joyful. This is in the key of G. The chords are what? G, C, and D. That doesn't mean that there are other chords too in the key of G. Those are the primary chords. They're the secondary chords. In the key of G, like A minor, B minor, and E minor. But the main chords and the major chords are 1, 4, and 5. And they're going to be the most often used chords in a song, usually. Okay, but all this is in the right hand is the chord. It's the tenor in the tenor in your thumb. And it's just breaking the chord. Instead of playing the chord, I play the top two notes, and on the off note, I play the tenor. Bum, 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 bum. And that creates motion. That's just a technique, just following the hymn book, that you can do. Look at bar 25. What is this in the left hand? What is that? Anybody know what that is theoretically? It's a tremolo. It is a pedal tone. And usually pedal tones are on the 1 or the 5 of whatever key you're in. I'm in the key of G, so it'll probably be on the G or the D. Okay, the root of the 1 or 5 chord. And this, it's the bass moves around, but I can do a D tremolo for that section. And it's a pedal tone. It doesn't match every chord, but it's okay. Does it sound all right to you? Maybe because we're on a D to a G to, and D is in both the D and the G chord, isn't it? So it matches. But sometimes you can do a pedal tone and it doesn't match every chord, but it just kind of acts as a It's a pedal. and it sounds fine. Okay, I just wanted to go. It's time to go. Let me just go to the last song, Be Strong in the Lord, on the chorus. I wanted to show you another thing you can do. Be strong in the Lord. Look, this is a gospel song. Every measure is one chord. Be strong, a D flat chord. B, E flat over D flat. What chord is the next one? A C minor, F minor, B flat minor, E flat major, A flat. It's a E flat minor to a A flat seven. Okay, so in that case, I can do arpeggios on the whole measure. I can do be strong, be strong, be strong. I can do an arpeggio. It's just running that chord up. You know, D flat, F, F, A flat, D flat, F, A flat, D flat. And then E flat over D flat. And I just do it faster. Okay, but you can do that. That is real exciting in congregational playing. Or I could just do eighth notes. I'm just an accompaniment. And it's just the chords that are there. And I'm just playing eighth notes. Okay, easy thing to do. Okay, I hope something is helpful today. Thank you for coming.
We trust this ministry workshop session was a blessing to you. Plan now to join us in the second week of July for Spiritual Leadership Conference 2011 as Lancaster Baptist Church celebrates 25 years of ministry. Let us know if there is any way we can be a blessing to you.